The reading is from Ecclesiastes chapter 4, beginning at verse 7, and this can be found on page 672 of the Church Bibles. Ecclesiastes 4, verse 7. Again, I saw something meaningless under the sun. There was a man all alone. He had neither son nor brother. There was no end to his toil. Yet his eyes were not content with his wealth. For whom am I toiling, he asked, and why am I depriving myself of enjoyment? This too is meaningless, a miserable business. Two are better than one, because they have a good return for their labor. If either of them falls down, one can help the other up. But pity anyone who falls and has no one to help them up. Also, if two lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? Though one may be overpowered, two can defend themselves. A cord of three strands is not quickly broken.
Great, thank you. Good morning, everybody. Most of you will know me by now. If you don't know me, my name's Erin, and I'm the curate here. And I'm quite excited slash nervous to be preaching this morning on relationships. Part of it, I think, is a bit of insecurity for me, because I'm not very good at relationships. And the other part of it is that I feel like God has given me some really good stuff to share with you this morning. The slide that's on the screen says to know and be known. To know and be known. And I believe that in the heart of every human, we have a desire to know other people and to be a known as well. This is what we look for in our relationships. And if I put it really simply, we want people to be interested in us as much as we are interested in them. We don't want a relationship where we are the one who chases all the time and gives all the time, and I'll talk about that a bit further in my talk. So this morning I want to cover just three areas of relationships. I want us to understand the different types of relationships that we find in the Bible. I want us to understand the pitfalls that we face in our day, and they are big. And when I was writing this and researching this, I was like, wow, this is big. And lastly, I want to dispel the fear of authenticity. I want to dispel that fear for you this morning. So I have a question. Where would you like to live? So, this picture here on this side of the trees is from a TV program that I'm slightly addicted to called When the Wilderness. It's on BBC Two on a Sunday night, 9 o'clock, just in case you want to watch it. And it's about a couple who own this house that's 100 miles from anywhere. And it's a competition where other couples are competing with each other to see who will get this home after this couple move back into a town. And it is very far away from everybody, and you have to get there by aeroplane. That's true. And they talk about all the dangers, all the wildlife and all that. This picture on the other side is a photo that I took when I was in India in 2005. Of a slum. And I didn't go up into the slum. We were on the main road. But I wonder which one you would like to live in. Do you like to be surrounded by people all the time, or would you rather be isolated from people all the time? And I suppose that when we're honest, sometimes I'd like to live in this house on a mountain, whereas other times I'd like to live in a slum surrounded by hundreds of others. And there's something about trying to find the place in the middle where we are comfortable, isn't there? Because being surrounded by people all the time tires me out, if I'm honest. But also being on my own all the time tires me out as well. I can go about, I don't know, let's see, I could go about 4 days without speaking to anybody before I start to lose my mind a bit, you know? But we have two, there are two personality types, and these are the extremes of personality types. So we have a wolf, a lone. Ecclesiastes, in our passage, we read, this is the case of a man who is all alone. He works hard to get as much wealth as he can, but actually he has nobody to share it. He's by himself. And the Living Translation says, it is meaningless and sad. See, in Genesis 2, chapter 18, in Genesis 2, verse 18, God said, it isn't good for man to be alone. I will make a helper. It isn't good for us to live alone. It isn't good for us to internalize everything that we feel. It isn't healthy for us to be like this. But then there is the other extreme where we are surrounded by so many people all the time. We become too social and we spread ourselves really, really thin. And we actually don't have any deep relationships with anybody because we don't really know anybody. In Proverbs 18, it writes, there are friends who destroy each other, but a real friend sticks closer than a brother. There is a difference between having lots of acquaintances and having true people who you know what you know and you can share your life. And we don't want to be people who isolate ourselves, but we also don't want to be people who stretch ourselves to the point that we actually can't have any relationships that are heartfelt. So given that the Bible warns us about each one, my big question is, what does it look like to simplify our lives and navigate our relationships healthily? And how do we focus our time developing the right kind of relationships? And there is no better place to go for this, and I'm getting carried away and not following my PowerPoint, than Jesus. I read this book, Richard gave me a book, and I read a chapter of it. I'm not that fast at reading books, and I have to really concentrate when I do. But this guy who wrote this book talked about that Jesus had five different areas of his life when it came to his interaction with other people. So if we think about Jesus and his life, we understand that he was a busy guy, wasn't he? And there are five areas that he was, you know, a busy guy in. In the public area, so the public sphere of his life was, we read in the New Testament, he was surrounded by crowds all the time. He was followed everywhere. He was inundated with loads of people who wanted to talk to him, who wanted to get something from him. Yeah? He ends up going up a mountain or into the sea just to get some space. Now, Jesus doesn't know every single one of these people, these thousands of people. He doesn't know them. He might know them to see. He might recognize them, but he doesn't know them. And that's the public sphere. And in our context, our public sphere could be things like in your job, if you work in a huge office. I used to work for a massive communications company. I knew my team, but I didn't really know that many other people. I kind of knew them, but didn't know them, if you know what I mean. In church here too, this church is a huge church. A huge church. I meet a lot of people who say, yes, I know you, but you don't know me. Like, yes, because it's a really big church and it's really hard to know everybody. And we live in that sphere of our lives, but that doesn't become everybody in this room. You all don't know my deepest, darkest secrets. Everybody who followed Jesus, the crowds who followed Jesus, didn't know him. They knew of him, but they didn't know him. And the next fear is social. So Jesus had, let me explain, Jesus had 72 people who he taught and he sent out. Now, these 72 people got a sermon from him. They were a little bit closer to him. They were able, you know, to say, oh yes, but Jesus said this, and I know he said this, and whatever. And Jesus gave them the Spirit, and they went out and they did his jobs, they did the works of the Spirit. So if I give you an example of this, it's like he taught them in a setting, and then they went out and they put his teaching into action. So it's a bit like going to a ladies' event or a men's event where you sit around and you talk to each other. You might not talk to the person who's, you know, speaking, but you talk to each other and you put the things that you're learning into action. The third is the personal, and this is getting down now to closer people. So Jesus chose 12 people to be the people that surrounded him, the people that he did things with. He ate with them, he walked with them, they were with him everywhere. They knew him. They saw him get angry and turn the tables. They saw him go away. They were there when he slept. They stayed together and they did life. Jesus was investing in these 12. He was spending hours and hours teaching them. He was spending hours and hours trying to get them to hear. And with us, that's like joining a life group. There's a group of people who you are around, who you sit with, who know you, who know the problems you're having with your kids, who know the problems you're having in your job, who know what you like, who know what you don't enjoy. This is a smaller group. This is a smaller area, a smaller group of people who you can share your life, who you can do life alongside. And then transparent. And what I found when I was doing this was that Jesus actually had two significant relationships with small groups of people. So Jesus had a relationship with three of the disciples, Peter, James, and John, and they were his closest people. They were like his right-handers. And we know this because when Jesus went to Gethsemane, he took Peter, the Bible says in Mark chapter 14, the Bible says he took Peter, James, and John with him, and he became deeply troubled and distressed. And he said, my soul is crushed to the point of death. Jesus did not tell the crowds that his soul was crushed. Jesus did not tell the 72 that his soul was crushed. Jesus didn't tell the 12 that his soul was crushed. Jesus told the 3. He had an intimate and closer relationship with 3 people. And that was really important. And actually, what we see, what happens is this, that Jesus invested in them. He wasn't just investing in them like he was investing in the 12. He was really investing in them because he knew that the big things were going to happen in the lives of these men. Peter loved Jesus so much that he cut the ear off somebody to protect him. But then Peter went on to launch the church. And Jesus kept this guy close because he saw something in him, because he knew that this guy was going to change the world. John, he wrote a gospel, a great one. And I don't know what happened to James, but I don't actually know. Sorry. Oops. But then there was another 3 people that Jesus hung out with that he really enjoyed spending time with. Mary, Martha, and Lazarus. Now, when Lazarus died, Jesus, he wept. And you don't weep for someone who you don't know. You don't weep for someone who isn't a part of your heart. And when Jesus was at their home, Mary and Martha had an argument. And I bet you, Fiver, if Jesus came to my home with me and my younger sister, we'd be on our best behavior. We wouldn't be arguing in front of him. But they did, and he was able to tell them off, you know. And that's because they had a friendship, a relationship. That being in Mary and Martha's home and just hanging out filled Jesus. It helped him, probably gave him energy. He was probably glad when he got there, probably took his sandals off, put his jammies on and just hung out. You know, that's what I do in my best friend's house, just so you know. But then there was a relationship that Jesus had that we all can have. And that is a divine one. That is our relationship with him. Jesus was close to the Father. He wakes early to pray. And in Mark, chapter 6, tells us that before Jesus chose the 12, he prayed all night. So before Jesus made a big decision, where did he go? He went to his Father. He prayed all night. And then he got up, and then he chose the 12. Now, I just share with something. If I don't have a good relationship with Jesus, I am not a nice person. If I have not spent time with him, I'm not nice. You don't want to talk to me. You don't want to be around me. I have this sort of like aura that walks 5 feet in front of me and clears a path. Because for me to be able to be holy who I am, I need to spend time in the Word, on my knees, with him. Because I can't function in life if I don't. And I wonder if you're the same. Because our relationship with God has a direct impact on our relationships in all of the other four spheres of life. It is the most important. It is the smallest because it is the most intimate, but it is the most important. And it's important that we focus on our relationship with him, because that is what empowers us. That is what fills us up. That is what makes us nice people. And that is what enables us to, in life, deal with fillers and drainers. Fillers and drainers. And when I first moved to England 12 years ago, I was so totally homesick. And I had a really hard time in like getting to know people. And this lady from my church, she took me and had coffee with me and talked to me about all my relationships. And she really, really helped me. But one image that she used was a radiator. And she says, a radiator, water comes in the top and flows out the bottom, or the other way around. And she said, there are people in your life who will fill you up till you're warm and you're nice. And then there are people in your life who will drain you. And that's true. There are people in my life who I desperately want to spend time with, because I know that when I spend time with them, I'm filled up and I feel good, and they make me feel good and they make me feel comfortable. But then there are also people in my life who drain the life straight out of me, who I don't want to see, who when I see, I go, and run away. If I've ever done that to you, I'm very sorry. But I don't think I have. But too many relationships with people who fill us up turn us into a drainer. If we take from everywhere, we get so full. If we drain other people, and we drain people, we're so full. But if we have our relationships where we give, and we drain ourselves, I'll give you and you, oh yes, and you, and what's your problem, and I'll help you, and I'll do this, and we end up empty. So we end up too fat or too empty. And it's really important for us that we understand that in our lives, we need to set the boundaries of relationships. So we have time where we spend with people who fill us up. And then we're able to spend time with people who take our energy away. That's important. See, Jesus, the crowds and the 72 drained his energy away. Because he was given, teaching, given, encouraging, given. But his relationship with the 12, well, I'd say that drained them away because they never understood anything. But, you know, his closeness with the 12 and the 3 and the Father filled him up. And if he didn't have those closer relationships, he wouldn't have been able to go out and give. Because Jesus was, he was like us, emotional, human. You know, he was just like us. He needed the fillers and he needed the drainers. And so do we. We need the fillers and the drainers to live a balanced a lifestyle that is good. But we live in a culture where people don't fill each other up. We live in a culture where our phones fill us up, but they don't. And this might be really quite harsh. And I saw this picture and I thought, this is exactly what makes me angry. This picture makes me angry. Because if I'm traveling, if I'm on a bus, if I'm on a train, even if I'm, sorry, mum and dad, if I'm at home in Ireland with my family and everybody's sitting on their phones, and you think to yourself, am I not important enough for you to put your phone down and talk to? Or you're thinking, is there something really interesting on that phone? Or is the world falling apart that you need to check your phone every 2 or 3 times? But the issue with social media and the issue with our phones is actually we live in a generation now. We are the loneliest we have ever been. We are the loneliest we have ever been. A definition for the loneliness is the perceived gap between the quality and the quantity of relationships that we have and those that we want to have. I have 567 Facebook friends. I know 200 of them to have a chat with. I know, just trying to think here, about 80 of them to have a coffee with. I know 3 of them that I could not be their friend because they know too much. It's true. It's very true. But those three of my friends live in Ireland. So actually, in England, I probably don't really know very many people who I would share all the depths of my soul to. And sometimes I think about that a lot, you know. I feel sorry for myself a lot, which I shouldn't because it's a sin, but anyway. Because I have moved house so many times since I've lived here. So, I mean, in the past 4 years, I've lived in 5 different places, which makes it really difficult to build relationships. Because in each of the contexts, it's different. A survey completed by the charity I relate, found that despite people spending more time in office, working on emails and on social media, more than 4 in 10 people in our country would say they have no friends. And the rise of our use of social media and Instagram and filters and Twitter and TikTok and YouTube and all that stuff, whatever, we can make even the most boring day of our life look like we're having a great time, but it's fake. All fake. A recent poll found that 18 to 24-year-olds are 4 times more likely to feel alone as those of people in their 70s. And a survey from the Office of National Statistics reports that Britain is the loneliest country in Europe. This photo was a photo that I took and posted on Instagram 3 years ago. This photo says, look at me, I'm spending time with God. I'm doing really well. This photo says, I'm reading and Voskamp, aren't I just super holy? This photo says a lot about me, but all is not what it seems. This photo was posted during a very difficult time in my life. I had not been accepted for ordination, and I had been sent to the other side of London to do a year in a different church. And I did not have an income that year, and I was given a place to live, but I'd left all the people that I'd spent 10 years building a relationship. My future was unknown. I didn't know whether I would get in or not. I was really given a year to prove myself. And this photo was taken in the January after I come back from being in Ireland. What this post says to the world is, I'm doing well, I'm pressing on, I'm reading, I'm enjoying my life. What this post really was saying to me is, I need a friend, a companion, I'm lonely. I needed to be known for who I was. And while our phones and our media give us a great way to communicate with other people, we're spending hours and hours in the bubble, waiting for people to reply to our messages, comment on the things that we put up there. And we're wasting our time. And we're being sucked into this vortex that we can't seem to get out of. And I'm not preaching at you, I'm preaching to myself. I spend so much time on Instagram, Facebook. I don't like Twitter too many stuff, but I spend loads of time watching like videos, stupid ones, you know, like how to melt a candle into a nice shape and just rubbish things. I spend so much time doing that. Like it seeps my life away. One Lent, I gave up Facebook and Instagram for the whole of Lent, and I had so much time. I go to bed and I'd be like, wow, it's still really early. I have so much time, because it wasn't sucking my life away. It wasn't a drain on my life. And this epidemic has seeped into the wider context of the church. Bill Hybels wrote a book called Simplify, and in this book, he discovered that 41% of people would say that their spiritual life is a private thing. And 37% of people say they would like to be discipled on their own. I will hide behind my social media, and I don't want anybody to see the real me. And I would like to be discipled by myself. and I'll find God on my own, and you don't need to help me because I can do it. Rubbish. But from what I've read, and I know that we grow in faith when we're in community with each other. And I'm going to tell you a story about how I know Rend Collective. I became a Christian when I was 24, and I became a Christian in a church called Bangor Elim, big Pentecostal church in Northern Ireland. And they had a group for people in their 20s called Rend. And we met on a Sunday night after church, and we sang and prayed for each other and went out and had coffee, because in Northern Ireland, coffee shops are open on a Sunday night. In England, they're not really. And on a Friday night at 11 p.m., we get together in a basement underneath the Chinese and pray for 2 hours. I wouldn't get home till 2 a.m. And now when I think back on it, I think I was crazy. But this period in my life, which was for about 3 or 4 years, was the best period in my life. When I look back on it, I think this was the best that my life has ever been. And I said to my mom, that was the best that my life has ever been. And my mom was like, no, it wasn't, Erin. You didn't, your job was hard and you didn't, But hanging out with people who had a passion for Jesus, praying with people who had a passion for Jesus, hanging around with people like that, being in a small group of people like that, fueled the fire for me. It completely put a fire inside me for Jesus. And it was really important. And that's why our communities and our relationships are really important. Because we want to live our life. I want us to have a fire in us for Jesus. But we can't do that by ourselves. We need each other. We need each other. Why do we want to do life alone? Are we afraid of other people? We want to create a bubble around ourselves and sit there and watch everybody else. But you're not going to touch my life, no. I'm okay, thank you. Are we afraid that if people get to know us, they'll be shocked and take a step back from us? Are we scared of that? Are we skeptical of people who lead the church? Are we skeptical of people like me and you think, well, if you really knew about me, you wouldn't be shaking my hand. But we are the body of Christ. I'm scared that if people in the church knew all about me, you'd kick me out the door. And I'm sure other vicars agree with that too, We never get angry or swear ever. Never ever. I'm joking. But my question is, has this individualistic selfie taking online time seeped all the way into our community that we no longer can have an authentic relationship with other people? Have we gone too far? Have we missed the mark? One of my favorite authors, Brené Brown, she writes this. Authenticity is the daily practice of letting go of who we think we're supposed to be and embracing who we are. Authenticity is about letting go of who we think others want us to be and embracing who we are, our passions, our gifts, our talents. And we as this church should be people who experience and live in authenticity. It's not superficial. It's not a chit-chat. It's genuine. It's heart-to-heart. It's gut level. It's proper life. And authenticity happens when people are honest about themselves. They're honest about who they are. They're honest about what's happening in their own lives. They share their hurts and their fears and their feelings and their doubts. But obviously this needs to happen in a safe environment. I am not up here telling you that you need to tell everybody around you all of your hurts and your pains. What I am saying is that we need to get ourselves into a community, a small one, 3 people, 12 people, a life group, something like that, where we can be authentic. But authenticity, I find, is almost the opposite of what our community is. My younger brother is not, he doesn't go to church, hasn't given his life yet. And I asked him when he came to visit me in December, I said to him, Matthew, why aren't you a Christian? And do you know what he said? I can't be a Christian because I swear. I was like, who told you that? Who told you that? We need to get past the fear of what other people will think about us and embrace who we really are. Because God has made us in his image, and he has made us amazing people. And we are wonderful people. I am a great person. Yes, I have all the baggage that other people have, but I am a great person because I am made in the image of God and I have his life inside me, and so are you. And why be ashamed of what God has made you? Why? See, authenticity leads us to intimacy with other people. And intimacy is a word that I can remember many years ago. I listened to a sermon and this guy was preaching, and he said, we all think that intimacy happens at night. We all think it's about sex, but it's not. Intimacy means into me see. Intimacy happens in relationships where we open our hearts to other people and other people can see the real and true us. Intimacy happens when we are true with each other. And we tend to use the darkness to hide our hurts and our fears and our failures. But actually, in intimacy, when we're in intimate a relationship with other people, all these things come out and it's okay. It means facing the fear of exposure. It means we have to be courageous and we have to really want people to know us. We all need authentic relationships to become who God wants us to be. We need authentic relationships to be who we were made to be. Hiding behind other people, hiding behind stuff, tires you. It drains your life. I can pretend to be somebody else for about 15 minutes, maybe half an hour, and then I can't. And then I can't do it any longer. And the real, true Northern Irish person comes out in me. Because God has made me the way he's made me on purpose. And God has made you the way he's made you on purpose. He's given you your character on purpose. You were not made to hide away behind a mask. You were made to be truly who you are with each other. And have an authentic, life-giving relationship, not only with God, but with each other. And I'm coming to the end, I promise, I've just seen the time. So I would encourage you that if authenticity in relationship is something that you want, and you're not in a home group, a life group, join one. Speak to Nigel, he's at the back there with his collar on. Speak to Richard, speak to me. And if you need somebody to share the stuff that you're carrying, maybe find yourself a few people you can have coffee with and pray with. A few people that you can trust. A few people that you can get intimate in alongside. Because the church is dying. Because people come into buildings like these and see perfect people. And we all know that we're not perfect. We all know that it's all a facade. And we need to become the real, true people who we were made to be. We need to become all that God has made us to be. We need to use everything that God has put inside us. And I am a very passionate person, and I have a very fiery temperament, and I am not sorry about that, because that is who God has made me to be. And sometimes I sound like Ian Paisley, and I'm not sorry about that either. If you don't know who he is, Google him. And it's really important. And David Gregg, our organist, a few weeks ago shared a video with the staff team. And I love this video so much. I know all the words. I'll sing along with it. But I think that this video says what I've been trying to say in a much more eloquent style. So we're going to end this morning, my talk this morning, we're going to watch this song, okay?
Line number one, you're supposed to have it all together. And when they ask how you doing, just smile and tell them never better. Lie number two, everybody's life is perfect except yours. So keep your messes and your wounds and your secrets safe with you behind closed doors. But truth be told, the truth is rarely told. I say I'm fine, yeah, I'm fine, oh, I'm fine. When it's out of control, I say it's under control, but it's not. And you know it. I don't know why it's so hard to admit it. When being honest is the only way to fix it. There's no failure, no fall, there's no sin you don't already know. So let the truth be told. There's a sign on the door, says come as you are, but I doubt it. Cause if we live like that was true, every Sunday morning pew would be crowded. But didn't you say church should look more like a hospital? A safe place for the sick, the sinner and the scarred and the prodigals like me. Truth be told, the truth is rarely told. Oh, am I the only one who says I'm fine? Yeah, I'm fine, oh, I'm fine, yeah, I'm fine, but I'm not. I'm broken, and when it's out of control, I say it's under control, but it's not. And you know it, I don't know why it's so hard to admit it. Is the only way to fix it. There's no failure, no fall, there's no sin you don't already know. So let the truth be told. Can I really stand here unashamed, knowing that your love for me won't change? Oh God, if that's really true, then let the truth be told. I say I'm fine. The truth be told.